Today, I'm going to continue the discussion of renormalization and comparing the perturbative renormalization scheme that I've been presented in the last lecture and Wilsonian renormalization group. So I'm going to first to continue the discussion of the renormalization group flow we derived in the local potential approximation. So remember what we did. So we considered renormalization. In what is called the local potential approximation, so often denoted LPA. So we started from a model with a cutoff K, sharp cutoff, to simplify the calculation, but that's in order to get the basic idea. And the original action was simply of the following form. There is a usual kinetic term, and there is a general potential V. Okay, and so the idea is to integrate all the modes. So renormalization procedure is integrate over the modes with momentum k between lambda and lambda divided by a factor that I'm going to call S. That's a factor that I call S. And integrating over the modes means that, in fact, if we consider what are the Fourier transform of this field, phi, we consider that phi of k is separated into something called that is called phi hat fast of k. So we just denoted phi hat fast of k is between, precisely between these modes, and phi slow, well, it's a Fourier transform of k is less than lambda divided by S. Okay? So, and the idea is to integrate over this mode, so over the, let me write this here in this way. Under the fast mode, fast, which are defined by k between lambda and lambda divided by S. So doing this procedure, we end up with an effective action for the phi slow modes. And we have seen that within the local potential approximation, it took the same form. It just took the form integral ddx, 1/2 of phi squared, but for the slow modes, plus some effective potential for the slow modes. That was the idea of the calculation. Okay? And we show that there was a relation that we can compute by, in this approximation, between the original potential and the effective or renormalized potential. But now, of course, this effective potential makes sense for the slow modes that are defined in this ball. So this is k, this is lambda divided by S, and we integrate all those modes in a k space. Okay, so in order to compare the theory, once we have performed this transformation, this renormalization group transformation, in this transformation, we have to perform a rescaling. So this was the first operation. The second operation consists in performing a rescaling by multiplying the momenta by S. So we have now a theory with lambda. So we perform rescaling. So we rescale the k into, let's say, k times S, which are my new k, my k normalized, which amounts to change x into x divided by S equal x renormalized. Okay? In order to have a theory, again, with the same cutoff that we can compare. And in order to keep this, we have to renormalize the field. So to change the phi into phi with s to some constant that we called phi renormalized. Okay. And in order to keep the kinetic term, so these are the slow modes, of course. And in order to have something that is preserve this kinetic term, we just have to take as S some coefficient that I'm going to call delta phi. With delta phi is, if you do the calculation, that's d minus 2 divided by 2. Okay, so that's the rescaling of x is reabsorbed in the rescaling of the phi. Okay. And so this delta phi is just called the scaling dimension of the field. Okay. And it turns out that in the LPA approximation, the scaling dimension given by this formula is equal to what's called the engineering or canonical dimension. Because in this renormalization procedure, this term was not changed. And this is the property of the LPA approximation, the local potential approximation. So it's a consequence of this approximation. Okay, in general, it's not true. In the full renormalization framework, delta phi will not be equal to. So the scaling you have to apply to the field will not be equal just to the naive scaling you derive by dimensional analysis. So this is classical dimensional analysis. Okay. Yes?
So it seems that there wouldn't be an anomalous dimension if you went beyond one loop?
Yes. There is an anomalous dimension. So beyond, so in the full theory, so beyond one loop, delta phi will be different from this delta phi naught. Let's say delta phi zero, the engineering canonical dimension, and the statement is that there is an anomalous dimension, there is, which reflects just the fact that the scale anomaly implies not only a renormalization of the coupling constant, but a renormalization of the dimension of the field at the same mechanism. Okay? Okay, so that's the idea. And when you go, when now I perform this change of variable, and that's just a change of variable in this action, there is no new calculation, I get that this action is called the renormalized action for my renormalized phi, and it would be of the form integral d dx, 1/2 d phi square, so this is for the renormalized field. This will be the renormalized scaling dimension. But, and that's, if you prefer, this will be a Vs of phi renormalized. And so this is the renormalized potential. Okay, and this potential contains all the possible coupling constant of my theory for just local term as powers of phi. And we saw that this is this local potential approximation. This is an approximation. There was a differential equation. There was a partial differential equation. There was differential equation in the space of potentials. Okay, which was of the form S d over ds of vs of phi equal something, which is a flow equation. Yeah. And then we have seen that, in fact, it's quite natural to assume that you have a potential that is a polynomial in phi, and truncating this equation to some order to get some approximation. Okay? And again, let me remind you, I hope you have seen this reminders of the statistical mechanics course. If you have not seen that, please just tell me and I explain you more. The general feature of renormalized group flows in the Wilsonian picture is that you have a space of coupling, a big space of coupling, which has some parameters in my action. You have a flow, renormalization group flow in this space of coupling. Okay? And what's interesting, because that's what tells you what's happening near a critical point, is when there is a fixed point. Okay, and a fixed point is a point that is stable under the renormalization group transformation. So at if the couplings are of the parameter of my theory are exactly at the fixed point, nothing changed. The theory is scale invariant. The model is scale invariant. So we are at a critical point. Now, if we are away from the critical point, that's what we're interesting. Because you may have, depending on the perturbation, two different cases. You can flow away from the critical point, and that's called an unstable direction. Well, in general, there is one unstable direction in most of the cases, but there may be several ones. And there are direction when you flow towards the fixed point. And so, in general, what you have is that you have a surface, a manifold, with co-dimension 1, if there is just one unstable direction. This direction is just a manifold with dimension 1. And if you are on this manifold, if you are your parameter as such that you sit on this surface, or this hypersurface, this manifold, you flow towards the fixed point. Okay? And if you are away, if you are above, you flow like this. And if you are below, you flow like this. Which means that in this case, you are in a different phase than this one, because the physics at large distance is governed by what's happening when you flow away from the fixed point. In general, you flow toward another fixed point. And this, what's happening here is very different from what's happening here. Okay? And for instance, for the Ising model or the 5-4 theory, this unstable direction turns out to be the mass term. It corresponds to the temperature in the Ising model. This direction will be the symmetric phase where the symmetry is unbroken, and this phase will be the symmetry broken phase where the symmetry is spontaneously broken. And so this manifold of co-dimension one is called the attractive manifold, if you want. Attractive manifold. And it corresponds in application to statistical mechanics to what's called the critical surface. Means that if the parameters of your model are so that you are here, the large distance properties of the model are those of the fixed point. Therefore, it's scale invariant at large distance. There may be some correction at short distance because you see the microscopic structure of your model. It cannot be completely scale invariant on a lattice, but at large distance, it's scale invariant if you are at the critical. Okay, so that's the general picture. That's the general picture. Fixed point here. Well, let's throw the fixed point in red because that's the most important part. Okay, the fixed point is here. Okay. So that's the general picture. Now, for our calculations, that was, it's a mixture of statistical mechanical idea and of quantum field theory results, because I used just a one loop general form of the effective action. We got the following flow. We saw that if we truncate to order pi to the 4, the potential, we can write V, the potential V of phi of t over 2 phi squared plus g over 4 phi to the 4, so that the renormalized potential is just some t of s over 2 phi squared plus g of s over 4 phi to the 4. And the result of the explicit calculation was that the variation with respect to the logarithm of the scale of t to the s was some Wilson function w relative to t of t of s, which was found to be 2t plus some coefficient, but this coefficient can be absorbed in the definition of g minus t g. Well, of course, here you have t of s. Okay. And d over ds of g of s was some Wilson function relative to the coupling g. And of course, this is a function of t of s and of g of s. This function is a function of all the available coupling in general. So this is a function of t of s and g of s. And this one was four minus d. G of s plus a. And there was a minus 3 g of s squared. Okay. And if you look at the structure of the flow, the structure is the following. If the dimension of space-time is less than 4, 3, 2, but in fact, in this is just a formula. So you can take it to be equal to 4 minus epsilon and consider epsilon as a small parameter. Small, then you will get the famous Wilson-Fisher epsilon expansion. Okay. And then, with these schemes, what you get is a renormalization group flow of the following form. This is T, this is G. Let me rise a little bit this. You have a fixed point here, the Wilson-Fisher fixed point. Here at 0, this is 0, you get, so let me call this W, a point W. Here you have a point which is just the origin, which is what's called the Gaussian fixed point. That's the point where V is equal to 0, so it's just a free massless scalar field that is scale invariant. And the flow are the following. The critical surface is here, it's a line that goes through O and W. The unstable line. It like that. The unstable surface is something like that. So this is the unstable line. This is the critical surface. Okay, and away from that, the flow are as follows. Okay, so you have flows like this. So in fact, you have two fixed points, you see. You have one trivial fixed point and one non-trivial fixed point. This fixed point has, in fact, two unstable directions. The direction when you make a perturbation in T and the direction when you make a perturbation in the coupling constant. So the trivial fixed point, O, has two unstable. And the fixed point W have one unstable direction. Okay, or repulsive if you want. Okay. And above the flow are as you expect, something like that. That's above and below. Where is my the color I use? Which one? I use the blue color. The flow are like that. Okay. And I hope you have seen the following nomenclature that if you are close to the fixed point and you make a perturbation towards the fixed point, you can write that the action for your field is the action as a fixed point plus some perturbation. If you are away from the perturbation, it means that here you modify the action by some. Okay. And you can choose the parameter that parameterize the way you can choose a coordinate system such that they correspond to the tangent vector that corresponds to the eigenvalue of the linearized flow. So you can write basically this as a sum over some alphas, some coefficient, let me call them g alpha, times the integral over d dx of some operator O alpha of x, with the property that you diagonalize the matrix ds over the original couplings. I'm sorry, d of gs, d of w of g with respect to the original coupling, the matrix of the derivative of the flow, so that under a flow, g alpha of s behaves like s, so it's the original g alpha times s to some dimension, delta. That would be called the dimension of the coupling g alpha. Okay? And in this case, if the coupling, if the dimension alpha is positive, it means that the g alpha of s increases with s. So this means that you flow away from the fixed point. So this is called a relevant coupling, relevant parameter. And if delta alpha of g alpha is less than zero, this is called an irrelevant coupling, because you are attracted. And if delta g alpha is equal to zero, this is called a marginal coupling. Okay? And similarly, if this g alpha is positive, this object that is some combination of the field, it corresponds to an operator, is called a relevant operator. So this is an operator, if you want. So it's a function, and this is a coupling. Okay? This operator are called relevant operator. In this case, the corresponding operator is called an irrelevant operator. And in this case, it's called a marginal operator. Okay? Good. So, okay, so that's the general picture. And from that picture, in fact, that's the way to recover the way to understand what's going on in the Ising model, for instance, why there is something going on with the exponent of the given by considering what's happening near the Gaussian fixed point are not the right scaling exponents. Okay. So now, since I'm interested in QFT, let's see what's going on in D equal 4. So in this case, well, this term is unchanged, basically, because A is basically, it's, it depends a little bit of the dimension, but it's not important. You get only this. So you get the following picture. You get the picture when you have here T, here G. But the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, that is at a distance epsilon from the Gaussian fixed point, merge with the Gaussian fixed point. So you have only one fixed point, which is the Gaussian fixed point O. And if you look at the flow looks like this. Well, there is still the unstable direction, just the perturbation by a mass term of a massless free theory. But you still have a critical surface, namely a line that is attracted toward the fixed point. And again, you still have the flow that looks like that. like that. So you see that now the Gaussian fixed point has one unstable direction. This is a critical surface. Okay. But if you look at what's going on here, the renormalization group flow equation for G are very different. Well, the unstable direction corresponds simply to the coupling TS, which is T, which is a relevant coupling. With dimension delta T equal 2. That's a 2. Okay. But now, what about the coupling G? If we write the renormalization group equation D over GS of GS, this is not equal to something proportional to GS. This is proportional to minus 3, basically, times A GS squared. So this means that, indeed, GS squared goes to 0 when S becomes large. G of S goes to 0, but not as a power. And if you solve this differential equation, something that you can do very easily, you find that it flows as 1 over logarithm of S. So it flows much, much, much more slowly than any power. So it means that G has scaling dimension 0. So it's a marginal coupling. But we are still attracted, so it behaves like an irrelevant coupling. So the coupling is called the marginally irrelevant. And if the sign was negative, it would be called, you would flow away, and it will be called a marginally relevant. Okay. Good. Okay, so that's the picture where basically we have truncated our renormalization group flow at order 5-4 so that we can compare with the perturbative calculation we did. But now, of course, something. In order to understand really what's going on, we have to look at the effect of the irrelevant operator. Because you see that from this kind of calculation, you know, what the Gaussian fixed point is a stable fixed point, and the factor 2 here is the dimension, the scaling dimension of T, and the factor 4 minus D, which is equal to 0, is equal to 4, is the scaling dimension of the operator delta S. So now we can play the same game, but truncate to order 5 to the 6. Truncate to order 5 to the 6. Okay. So then now I'm going to consider a potential V of phi of the form T over 2 pi squared plus G over 2 pi 4. And I had a new coupling H. It's over factorial 4 with my notation. Here I will take factorial 6, phi to the 6. And I truncate this here. Okay? And you play the same game. Now, you are going to have that T is renormalized, G is renormalized, H is renormalized. So same equation for T. And now you are going to have some Wilson function for T, some Wilson function for G, and some Wilson function for H that will depend on these three couplings. Okay, so I won't do the calculation. It's just expanding some polynomials. I just give you the results. The W for T is 2T plus G. Well, there is a factor A. So let us remember this factor A, which tells us that this comes from the one-loop diagram. And here you get G minus TG. Okay, so in fact, there are no corrections given by H for the renormalization of the mass term. For G is different because you get the 4 minus D G plus A times the minus 3 G squared we had before. But then we get a term plus H minus TH. Okay? And for WH, what you get is six minus 2D times H plus A, if I am not mistaken, I get minus 2H minus 15 G times H. Okay, that's the result of the calculation. And if you think a little bit about that, this comes from the Feynman diagram. Remember, this is the result of the one-loop calculation. So they come from some one-loop diagram. And if you think about it, well, remember, this first term, renormalization of the mass coming from the 5-4 couplings, is associated to this diagram. These terms, which come from the correction of the mass, comes from the same diagram when we take into account the fact that the propagator depends on the mass. So we can consider that it is this diagram. This is a massless propagator, and this is a propagator with a mass correction. Okay. Similarly, this term we have seen is given by this diagram. Okay. So why is there a contribution that comes from? Oh, what happened? Oh. That's because if we have 5-6 diagrams, we have vertices with 6 legs. And such a term will come from the fact that if we have a vertex with 6 legs, there is a tadpole diagram like that. So one of the propagators is there, and this is a one-loop diagram, and there remain 4 legs. So this contributes to renormalization of phi to the 4. And similarly, this term is the same diagram, but they have a correction due to the mass. Okay, and finally, the renormalization of H. There is a term proportional to, oh no, there is no 2H, I'm sorry. The 2H comes from this one. I'm sorry, so this is just this term. The 2H was this for D equal 4. So there is only a single term. And this single term comes from a diagram where you have, so remember, we have a one-loop diagram where, so it's a diagram similar to this one. But on one side, you have a 4 legs vertex corresponding to insertion of G phi to the 4. And on the other diagrams, you have six like diagram, okay? And again, this diagram has six external legs, so it contributes. It's a one-loop diagram that contributes to the normalization of the phi-6 coupling. Okay. Okay, so now I'm going to show you what is the structure of the renormalization group flow of this diagram. So first, indeed, less than four. In fact, we get the same picture than here, except that there is a third direction. But in this third direction, in the Wilson fixed points, it's an attractive direction. So the Wilson fixed point is a bit moved. But so there are a few corrections. So we get better estimate of the critical exponent just with the 5 to the 4. But the picture is the same. Now, let me give you some feature of what's going on in D equal 4. And since the drawings are a bit difficult to do. Well, it's not very difficult. And since I think last year I made some nice picture on the computer, let me just show this picture. So can you activate the video, please? If not, I can show the picture, but that's better. So this picture is not very nice. It's exact. It has been computed by Mathematica. I'm sorry, I'm using Mathematica, not Maple. I should be using Maple here in Waterloo. But okay, so this is the renormalization group flow. So you see you have some lines that represent the direction of the flow. And I should have put arrows, but when I put arrows, the picture becomes extremely messy. Okay, so this is three-dimensional space of the three couplings. This is a coupling for phi squared. This direction is a coupling for, this is G, the coupling for phi to the 4. And the third direction, in this direction, is a direction for the phi 6 coupling H. Okay, so that's the renormalization group flow for D equal 4. So in fact, there is, the flow goes that way. You know, they go this way, this way, and there is a two-dimensional critical surface where the flow goes to the Gaussian fixed point. Gaussian fixed point. And if you are above this critical surface, you flow away, and if you are below, you flow downwards. Okay? So that's a general picture, except that the fixed point is a Gaussian fixed point. So now imagine that you cut away, you approximate, you forget about H, and you study the flow only in the T and G plane. You get the picture that I draw on the blackboard and discussed at length. So these are the renormalization group flow in the phi squared, phi 4 coupling. And again, you see the Gaussian fixed point is here. You have flow like that. And if you analyze what's going on, there is a Gaussian fixed point. There is a stable manifold, which is a critical surface. And along this critical surface, you flow, but slowly, slowly, when you reach. Okay, so now what's going on when I go to the six coupling case. So remember, in the six coupling case, there is a critical surface. It can be computed by some algebraic function. But let me stay on the critical surface so that on the critical surface, I can forget about the T coupling. For each G and H, it has some value. And for project out the flow on the critical surface. OK, so these are the randomization group flow on the critical surface. And let me show them here. OK. You see, this is on the critical surface, the G axis, the H axis. But H has to be considered as positive because otherwise the flow, the potential is unbounded. So it's an unphysical region. But now G can be considered as negative because the H 5-6 term is always there to stabilize the vacuum. So in fact, you can study what's going on for positive G and negative G and what's going on for G and H. OK, so what you see is the following picture. You have flow that in the positive H and positive G plane behaves as expected. H in D equal 4, H is irrelevant. Delta of H, oops, I'm sorry, it won't work. Delta of H is minus 2. Delta of G is still 0, and delta of T is plus 2. So H is an irrelevant coupling, and you see that you start from H positive, you flow away. You flow towards the line where H equals 0 and G is non-zero. And if you are along some line where G is equal to H is equal to 0, you flow, but in a much slower way toward G equals 0. So the flow like that. You, H decreases very quickly, but in the same time, H moves down, but much slower. So you get flows like that. OK, and you see, for instance, something interesting. You see that if you start from a phase where G is negative, but H is positive, the flow in this approximation always drives you. So in this direction, in fact, it turns out that the combination of H and G makes that H looks like a relevant parameter. It's just you look at the sign of what's going on here. Yeah. Oh, that's simply because when G is negative, GH is positive. I'm sorry. When G is negative, GH is positive. So this term is negative. It's just this phenomenon. But no, I'm sorry. This term is positive. Yes. This, it means that this term is positive, G is negative. So you flow this direction. But after the time, you cross the line and you go down. So it's really an attractive fixed point here. Okay. And in particular, this shows that, in fact, if you start from a theory that is defined with a cutoff with a phi 6 term that is an irrelevant and non-renormalizable term in four dimensions, then the effective theory at large distance or low energy will always be the theory when this term is set to 0. So this explains why you don't need and you cannot add a phi 6 term to the phi 4 theory to construct a renormalizable theory. If you added such a term at the energy of the cutoff, it renormalizes to 0. So no need to introduce it from scratch, because if you introduce it at the scale of the cutoff, the effect of this term will become vanishingly small when you take the continuum limit. OK. Yes?
What about theories that have just inner Lagrangian non-renormalizable couplings?
Sorry?
What about the Fermi interaction, say, where we have a non-renormalizable coupling in the classical theory, but then UV we have a completion, but then what's the rationale?
Ah, yes. So these are the flow in the couplings at the scale of the cutoff. So if you want to construct really a phi 4 theory, no, I'm sorry. If you want to construct a phi to the 6 theory, with a 5 to the 6 coupling, a renormalized coupling, at the scale mu, the renormalization scale that is much, much smaller than the cutoff renormalization, it means that you have to start from an H coupling so that the renormalized H is over the 1 at the coupling. But in order to do that, it means that you have to start from a H at the scale of the cutoff that is way, way, way up in order so that when you perform your normalization procedure, you end up not at H equals 0, but at H finite. And well, from this equation, you expect that this coupling will be of order lambda square, very, very, very large. And then you have no control of what's going on. And in general, in fact, you discover that you will run into problems with unitarity and other things exactly as any non-renormalizable theory. So these are the flow in the coupling at the scale of the cutoff. The coupling is a renormalized action in the we had in this scheme before. So the renormalized coupling at some scale mu are the couplings that are somewhere here once you have performed on your renormalization group transformation for scale lambda to scale mu. Because in this framework, the renormalization scatter S has to be taken lambda divided by mu, very large. And what you want is something that makes sense after renormalization back to factor S. Okay. Okay. So I think I'm done with the video. Well, the video, the pictures. And what perhaps I will end up. I think I'm going to end. Oops. Yes. I'm going to end up with going back to the how are defined effective coupling constant in the renormalized theory in the perturbative approach. So I'm leaving Wilson and back to what's called running or effective coupling constant in QFT in my perturbative picture. What I did yesterday, the first part of the course. So remember, now we'll go back to the phi 4 theory, the only renormalizable theory you can. So we go back to phi to the 4. And we have seen that we can renormalize phi to the 4. And for the 4-point function, the irreducible 4-point function, which is gamma r of some momenta, p1 up to p4. So this is the renormalized 4-point function. I put an R for renormalized. It's a function of the renormalized coupling constant and of the scale at which we have defined renormalization scale, at which we have defined what is the renormalized coupling. So this is renormalization scale. This is the renormalized coupling. And we got an expression, remember. We had the GR, it was GR, and then it was something like minus GR squared. There was some factor, turns out 1 over 2 times 4 pi squared, and times the logarithm of, then it was mu squared divided by P1 plus P2 squared plus the 3 other diagrams. Coming from this Okay, and you see that, so it's a function of gi and of mu. And we have seen that if we change mu, it can be reabsorbed into a change of gr. It's a beta function we're defined as mu dd mu of gr at physics fixed. This defines beta function, beta Callan-Simoncic or gr. And I showed you that basically this is more or less minus the Wilsonian function or the coupling G in the Wilsonian framework, simply because here I am changing the energy scale, while in the Wilsonian framework we are changing the length scale. And this is logarithmic derivative. Okay. But now you may ask the following question. What's happening if I change P into some rescaling factor? So what's happening if I change the PIs into PIs time a factor? And let me call this factor S minus 1. I will give a different name. I won't choose the name lambda because lambda has been already taken. S has already been taken. So what did I do? Well, I didn't use that. Ah, yes. Okay, let's call it a factor x. Okay, just x. Okay, so you see that then gamma 4 of xp I consists in multiplying here by x. So gamma r of xpi, it depends on gr and of mu. Since it is given by this function, it's the function only on p divided by mu, it's identically equal to gamma 4 of pi gr mu divided by this big x. And for the two-point function, that would be the same. So that's in fact independent of whether it's a two-point. No, I'm sorry. For the two-point function, it would be, there would be a factor x, because it's proportional to p squared. I'm considering, of course, a massless theory. Okay. So making a change in the momenta amounts to a change in mu. But we know that. So that's a trivial. It's just dimensional analysis. But now we use renormalization theory to state that this is equivalent to pi and some gr of x of mu, with gr of mu given by an equation, which is, since I divide by mu, x d over dx of gr of x is just minus beta of gr of x. So you see that changing the momenta amounts to change the coupling constant, hence the name running or effective coupling constant.
So that's a proper definition. Okay. And you can see also that another is a plus beta, because in fact, if you think about it, here I am changing the physics. Okay. And you can see from this that you can write an equation of the forms making a rescaling of the PI, of the P's, sorry, amounts to randomization. So you can write an equation of the forms that d gamma over d relating the how the d gamma depends on all the momenta, something like sum over I of pi, d over d gamma of pi, with an equation for the how the four-point function depends on the coupling constant with the beta function of g. You can write an equation something like that. I do not make precise exact thing, but something like that. And such equation are called a randomization group or Kalan-Simansky. I'm sorry, there is an Simansky equation for the correlation functions. Okay. So I hope you have a better understanding what we mean by running our effective complete constant for phi to the 4. This means that if we rescale the momenta by going to higher energy, this can be reabsorbed into a change in the complete constant. Okay? Okay. Yes?
Exact in form, at least.
Pardon?
This would be exact in form to any order.
Well, in fact, this equation will be exact at all order if this results hold at all order. Simply, the beta function will be more complicated. And you will have, in addition, a term that comes out from the renormalization of the field. So, in fact, you will have something like this. Some gamma times some dimension, delta, some n delta, where I is the dimension of the field if I'm considering an n-point function that comes from the renormalization of the field phi, the anomalous dimension, the anomalous dimension. And in high energy physics, you are going to meet, for instance, from quantum electrodynamics or for gauge theory, there is that one loop. We are going to see that next week. There is a renormalization of the field, of the gauge field. That one loop. And the renormalization of the Dirac field, too. And so you get such equation. Well, I wrote it in a very sketchy way, so there is no some coefficient and some sign maybe different, just to get you to see how where this equation comes from. It comes from just from the fact that rescaling the momenta in a massless theory amounts to rescale the momentum scale, the renormalization scale, but this renormalization scale can be reabsorbed in the change of the coupling constant to get a relation between two correlation functions calculated with the same renormalization scheme. Okay. Okay. So this one and this one. This one are the same renormalization scheme. So that's the one we have to compare. We have to compare quantities calculated in the same way. Okay. Okay. So I talked about the scale invariance and the scale anomaly. I gave this relation. So I think I am almost done for this discussion of pi 2 4. I think you have, if you have any question, it's time now to discuss them, to ask them. Well, you are welcome to come in my office, but yes?
So LHC experiments, do we actually see the coupling constants?
Yes.
How much do they change? Like, how does it scale with energy?
I'm afraid I'm not very good at head calculation of with exact number, so I'm afraid to give you a wrong number. Let me look at the data. They change by some amount because that's a very good check of the way the coupling constant scale of the strong interaction change. Well, the calculus is much more complicated, and you don't have a direct access. But I think they are very good check that consistent with two-loop calculation of gauge series and perhaps three-loop, but I haven't sure, because then it becomes quite unstable, the effects of mass of quarks and things like that. But I think that the checks up to two-loop have been quite achieved. In fact, they have not been achieved by the LHC. I think they have been achieved by the previous accelerator, the LEP, which was one of his great achievements. Well, he made some very important discovery at the beginning, but then he turned for some time. They were looking for the Higgs. They found top quarks and etc. But one of its big and great, or if you want, not very rewarding, but very important task was to check many, many aspects of QCD and the standard model up to two-loop corrections and to check whether the experimental results agree, and that was one of the checks. But I prefer to reply to more check in the paper. But they changed by some amount. It's not 10 times more, but it's changed by a factor of order 10% or more, perhaps one. Yes?
So in D greater than 4,
yes,
does the theory look free?
Yeah, in D larger than 4, the theory looks free. For the following reason, let me go back to some free space. Okay, I think, no, in fact, your question is very good because I'm going to explain to you what's going on equal larger than 4 and one subtle point about what's going on equal 4. So let me go back to D, to 5-4, pure 5-4, D larger than 4. So then, again, we can do the calculation. The renormalization flow would be, again, like that. The Gaussian fixed point, unstable direction. Stable direction. But now, the G phi to the 4 coupling is strongly irrelevant. G is irrelevant. Its scaling dimension, which is 4 minus d, now is largely negative.
Shouldn't that be a positive direction?
Pardon?
So why would there still be an attractive direction? What?
Simply because the scaling dimension of g
it's truly
is
right.
Negative
sure.
In d equal 4. So it's strongly irrelevant. And then what I explain when you ask me the question about phi to the 6, also for phi to the 4, if we want to construct a massless, for to simplify, massless phi to the 4 theory with a renormalized coupling GR at a scale mu it's not the scale, yeah. A Renoirized coupling finite at a given scale mu, so we want that to have a G here. We have to start. We consider our pair coupling G pair at a scale lambda. Very, very far away. Where the approximation breaks down. So in fact, there is no way to construct a theory. In perturbation theory, the only theory you can construct that is consistent is a theory with GR equals zero. And that's just the fact that this reflects the fact that phi 4 theory is non-renormalizable. Is indeed larger than 4. Yes?
What about the theory with asymptotic freedom where there is an attractive direction for the Gaussian?
Okay, so that's. Okay, I'm going to now, I won't discuss more, so I'm going to discuss this renormalization effect until the end of the lecture. So let me wait 5 minutes and I'm going to discuss asymptotic freedom theory. Okay. But before that, let me go back to what's going on when D equals 4, where G is marginally, the coupling is marginal, but we have seen that it's marginally irrelevant. Again, because we flow like that slowly, but we still flow a lot. So if you do that, and you integrate the equation, remember, we have this equation of motion that we can rewrite as, if you want, mu d of d mu of g equal some coefficient k times, there was a 3, so some coefficient, let's say. Write 3 half 1 over 4 pi squared g squared. Okay? And let us see, solve this equation. Solve this equation. And obviously, we find. Do I have the calculation here? I don't have the calculation here. That's not very good. It's in my notes in French. OK, I think we are able to do the calculation. you divide this by g squared, which this is 1. Well, let's write this. G squared. So you see that you can write this as dg over g squared equal 3 half 1 over 5 squared d mu over mu. So minus 1 over g, and let's consider the renormalized coupling here, minus 1 over g plus 1 over, well, minus 1 over g plus some constant. So minus the original g naught is equal to 3 half 1 over 4 pi squared log of mu divided by some mu naught. OK? Therefore, which one is this? The second one. So g of mu is equal to just need to not to make any mistake. G naught divided by 1 minus 3 half 1 over 4 pi squared. Log of mu over mu naught minus, I hope I have not made any mistake. Okay. And so, remember, so G naught is the original. So this is G. This is, let us say, the scale energy mu. And I want to construct a theory that has my renormalization scale mu naught as a finite Coupling constant G naught. And I'm asking, what is the effective Coupling constant? What is the Coupling constant that at given scale mu much larger than mu naught? What is the running Coupling constant at high energy? Is G of mu. Okay. So that's the solution of the perturbative of the renormalization group equation. So we have integrated our results at one loop. So at leading order, you see that it's G naught. Oh, and there is a, I'm sorry, there is a G naught here. It's not important. Yes, there is a G naught here. So at leading order in G naught, you recover that this is G naught plus 3 half G naught squared log. That's a result of one loop. But we integrated it over. And when we integrate it over, so first it grows with mu. This is the result of perturbative theory. But we, when you integrate the equation, because they are valid here, but they are valid here, they are valid here, and here. So okay, what we get is something. It grows at infinity, and it grows at infinity. There is a pole at. So, you see, at a given mu, this becomes 0, so it becomes infinite. So, there is a pole at some energy scale, which is given, and here the calculation is quite easy. It's mu or mu naught exponential of 2/3. Oh, is it 2/3? No, there is no 2/3. I'm sorry. It's a beta function, there is no 2/3. Okay, so forget about the 2, but that's not important for the argument. I'm sorry. 1 over. 4 pi squared, 1 over G naught. Okay, no factor 2 here. I didn't pick the correct beta. Okay, so the important point is that there is a pole here. So at these poles, G of mu becomes infinite. So really, we cannot trust anymore. Even if we were able to resum perturbation theory, we cannot trust it anymore. But remember, we have seen that G of mu is the effective coupling. It's the renormalized coupling constant of the function of the mass, but it's also the effective coupling constant. I think that is now hidden. As a function of the energy. So it means that the theory, is defined at high energies. Okay. And this phenomenon, this pole, this phenomenon, was discovered by Landau in the 50s. Lev Landau, famous physicist. He saw some very important contribution in high energy physics. So it's called the Landau pole, if you want. Okay. It means that the 5-4 theory is in fact non-well-defined. It's well-defined in perturbation theory, but beyond perturbation theory, it's non-defined. And this is a non-perturbative phenomenon. This is a non-perturbative phenomenon. Well, it's a perturbative phenomenon because we did use it for one loop calculation, but in the sense, it's non-perturbative because this pole in energy scales is the exponential of 1 over G naught. So it's something that grows. That's something that you can never see in perturbation theory. Okay. Okay. And in fact, well, there is some part of the history. I didn't mean much history, but in fact, I think this was discovered around the 50s, but I'm not sure, perhaps the beginning of the 60s. But okay. And at that moment, theoreticians knew only two theories, 5-4, and some of its extension, and QED. And both for those theories, the beta function is positive. This comes out from the fact that the beta function, there is a sign plus 3 g squared. And so, this led many high energy physicists to believe that, in fact, the quantum field theory approach to build the theory of particles, what would become the standard model, was not the right track. And of course, some people and some very good people continued, but some people tried other things. Some people following a famous, at that time, US physicist called Jeffrey Chu, you know, tried to, what they call dual models, or bootstrap. They tried to define just from the S matrix, the properties of the S matrix, a consistent theory of strong interaction. Saying quantum field theory is not the right object, constructing quantum field and Green's function of quantum field, vacuum expectation in the vacuum doesn't make sense. We have to work with the S matrix elements, the diffusion amplitude, because those are the only things we can access experimentally. Okay. So this failed at that time. But all was not lost, because now some of this idea of bootstrap, of looking at the analysis properties of S matrix plays a very important role now in high energy physics, especially in relation with the ADS-CFT correspondence, the study of, well, there are some great experts here, so we are going to hear about that. But finally, so that was the situation in the 60s, basically, 50s, 60s. Well, nevertheless, as you know, in the 60s, people started to build what would become the standard model. So people in the standard model started to build theory involving gauge theories in particular. So the standard model was built in the 60s. By various people, Goldstone, Weinberg, Salam, Higgs, Engler, Kibble, the collaborator that shows that in gauge theories there is something called the, what's called now the Higgs mechanism, that makes, allows to have vector particle with a mass. So standard model, gauge series, became part of the game. But yet, people were unsure that this theory makes sense because of this problem of non-perturbative, non-renormalizability. And it's only at the beginning of the 70s, around 71 or 72, well, there was some calculation before, that people discovered that non-abelian gauge theories, for non-abelian gauge theories, the beta function is negative. That was, well, the first to do the proper calculation was Gerhard Toft. Then this was rediscovered or reused by Gross, Pulitzer, and what's the name of the last one? Wilczek, yes, of course, sorry, to construct the theory of strong interaction. So then we had a story of electroweak plus a strong interaction built out of non-abelian gauge theories. It's a bit of abelian for U1 of electromagnetism, but well, there are two U1, in fact. But. Okay, so that was fine. Finally, QFT, quantum field theory, the right object to construct the theory of the energy world. And for some good reason, they are the only quantum theory that makes sense and are compatible with special relativity, at least. Okay. And what's happening? So this theory are called if beta is negative, the theory is called asymptotic freedom. It's called asymptotic freedom. And why is it called asymptotic freedom? Because it's in this case, the effective coupling constant as a function of the energy scale mu is g naught divided by 1 plus g naught times some log of the energy scale, well, with some coefficient. And in that case, when mu goes to infinity, high energy, g of mu goes to 0. So in that case, in order to construct your renormalized theory with a finite coupling at a finite energy scale, the bare coupling constant you have to put in your theory, in your regularized theory, in your functional integral, has to be very, very small. And that's very good, because first it goes to some finite limit, and secondly, if it's very, very, very small, it means that you can trust perturbation theory. Okay. So, in this case, we are in good track. The theory is consistent at high energy. So, we have no problem in building a theory that is consistent with special relativity, where you need a Minkowski metric and properties of space-time that are everywhere locally flat. Okay, so it's consistent at high energy. And perturbation theory construction is reliable. So the hypothesis we did by assuming that we can make a perturbation trick, it makes sense in this case. It doesn't really make sense for pi to the 4. It makes sense for its application to statistical mechanics because here there is a physical cutoff. But for high energy where there is no physical cutoff or a physical cutoff very, very high so that you can neglect it for all practical purpose except a few cosmological at the moment, so cosmological speculation. I don't mean about what we think about what the universe is, but what we can actually measure. Okay, then that's fine. And for this case, the beta function is like that instead of being And finally, one last word, what you gain with asymptotic freedom, the fact that the theory is weakly coupled and consistent at high energy, you lose it at low energy. Because at high energy, the coupling constant becomes strongly coupled. So it doesn't mean that it is inconsistent. It means simply that you cannot compute what's going on at low energy by perturbation theory. And for instance, well, just one, in a gauge theory, imagine that you have a strong theory, a strong interaction theory with massless quarks. Well, the quarks are not really massless, but for many things, well, at least the U and D quarks have very small mass. You can have you can still have hadrons. You can have mesons, you can have hadrons, you can have the mass of the proton. Okay? And if you think about that, the mass of the proton has to be equal to the renormalization mass you use in your perturbation theory times something over order exponential of minus something over g. The strong, well, it will be the what's called the alpha strong, the coupling constant of strong interaction. So if you have massless quarks and try to compute the fact that there is a hadron, a bound state with three quarks, you find in perturbation theory that it has zero mass. Of course, it has a very heavy non-zero mass, but this mass, you cannot see it to any order of perturbation theory because it's exponential to minus 1 over alpha string. And many, many, many other quantities of the effective strong theory are not calculable. Or then you have to make phenomenological model or rely on non-perturbative calculation. But that's what makes life so interesting. OK, thank you.